with Rick Snyder of the FOP here in Indianapolis. They not only represent IMPD, they represent Marion County Sheriffs, they represent other police agencies here in the city and the county. In Detroit, I mean, everybody knows Detroit is broke, bankrupt, and they've got a shortage of police officers. Indianapolis has a triple-A credit rating. They're able to borrow. They got money. But when people hear, Rick Snyder, what you're talking about, that we've got an officer shortage and our officers are aging, it sounds like Detroit in terms of what they're dealing with their police officers and their shortages. Is this something – but we're not Detroit. So this – in your view, it is – we've misapplied where our dollars ought to be going.
Absolutely. And let's talk about Detroit for just a second. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. We do a lot of comparative analysis with cities similar size, population, mm-hmm. geographic area. Detroit, Michigan, as of 2012, they had just a little over 700,000 citizens within the city limits that they were responsible for policing. Mm. 143 square miles. Okay, let's talk about Indianapolis. We have over 800,000 citizens, so 100,000 right. more right. citizens. Right. 372 square miles. Okay?
We're bigger than 372, so we got a wait, how much is Detroit? 100
what? 143 square miles.
Square miles, and we're 372.
So we're 100 and some odd square miles larger than Detroit.
More than twice the size of Detroit.
And their number of officers is 2,770. We today are at 1,546. It is a crisis, and no one wants to talk about it. We have got to get our hands around this, and we really have to do this during this budgeting process, or else we're just going to be rehashing the same problem next year. We got to get on a five-year strategic plan.
Is part of this that here in Indianapolis, we don't feel like we're in a city of 800,000, 900,000. We don't feel that urban crunch of people.
You know, I think that's changing. I think it's not only do we fill those people, we're spread out, of course.
Yeah,
again, we're talking
yeah.
about
yeah.
patrolling the whole county. It's unique.
Right.
But also don't forget we're unique in these aspects as well. Those numbers only include our citizens. It doesn't include the residents in the excluded cities and towns within the Marion County.
It doesn't include Lawrence, area. Speedway, Beach Grove, right?
Doesn't include them, mm-hmm. but they're here and we still provide services to them when they're out and about in the Indianapolis area. It doesn't include our large sporting events mm-hmm. and all of our convention activities, which mm-hmm. we support.
Right.
I mean, we're supportive of doing those things. But also don't forget all of our local colleges and universities and the people who travel in for work and education.
Are we also at something where when we look at a strategic plan, we look at funding, that it's time for the 500 Expo, the Classic, the mini marathon, all these little races and whatever, if they're going to use your guys and ladies not on an off-duty situation but an on-duty to provide security, they need to write a check to somebody. They need to write a check to the city.
Yeah, in April of 2012, again, we saw this coming and tried to sound the alarm under then-director Frank Straub. And we put forward a 10-step stabilization plan. And we mm-hmm. said, hey, here are 10 recommendations to stabilize the financial situation we're in now mm-hmm. so we can now buy ourselves time to have the tough discussion about how to move forward. The mayor's office scoffed at our plan and looked the other way. However, one key component in that was to draw down a user fee mm-hmm. through the sporting events, rental cars, and conventions mm-hmm. to help offset the cost of using the public services. Quietly, that got done with the mayor and the council. That's exactly what we're talking about.
When an officer is accused, one of your members is accused of wrongdoing, and again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty through the process.
Yes, sir.
What is FOP's responsibility? Because people in the public look and they see officer accused, and just like they see a civilian accused, even though, yes, you're innocent until proven guilty, you see it on television, oh, yeah, they must be guilty.
Yeah.
What is your role in that?
Our role is this. If the officer is an actual member mm-hmm. of the Fraternal Order of Police.
Dues-paying member.
Correct.
Okay.
They can petition the FOP for legal representation, legal assistance. Mm-hmm. That goes through a process with our executive board, the leadership of the FOP, and we review whether or not the incident and the allegations being made mm-hmm. relate and revolve around a police action, mm-hmm. okay? And if so, we then put that forward to the body of the lodge. Again, mm-hmm. we're bottom-up driven.
Okay. Right.
So to all of our members who are paying into this mm-hmm. as to whether or not to provide assistance, they vote on that. If they vote to assist, then we do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is very important, and sometimes, you know, people can get on various sides of an issue, especially very hotly contested issues, and rightfully so. But no one understands due process more than police officers. We exercise within those limits and that framework every day. So even when we make an arrest on people, listen, any of us officers, we've been there and we've had to do that, make an arrest. It's not that we now don't like that person or we have a personal issue with that person. It's now there's a process, and they deserve due process and a fair and impartial review. All we ask is that our officers get the same thing. Now, there are incidents that are a criminal offense that's outside of the law, doesn't involve an administrative process or those kinds of things. They're not even eligible for assistance. So, again, it's got to meet those criteria, and if it does and they get assistance, it is then the members paying their dues that are paying for that.
They're paying for that, not the taxpayers.
No.
239-13, tell me, go to Elisa, who's been waiting patiently. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos.
And good afternoon.
Mr. Snyder.
Hi, Elisa.
Yes.
I had an incident, and I just wanted to know the protocol during a car accident. Mm-hmm. I was involved where a lady hit the back of my car when my vehicle was parked. It wasn't even in motion. Mm-hmm. We waited on the police. She tried to give me information, alleged information, several different times. Every time I tried to verify insurance until the police came, nothing was panning out. When the officer arrived, he did not verify our insurance or if our license were legit, or even she had expired plates on her car. He never said anything about that. She just drove off. Then I came to find out she gave me false insurance information. She gave me information from her that was her family's insurance card, I guess she had in her vehicle, and she gave me that, and that insurance, Farmers Insurance, had no claim for her at all. So I called the East District about the situation, and they kept saying they was going to have the officer get back with me. No one has ever returned my car.
This accident was a month ago?
It was August the 1st, 2013.
And East District has not gotten back to you?
No.
All right, I'm going to give you two ways to move. I want you to call back the East District, and you want to speak with the commander of the East District. Who's the command?
Jim Waters.
Yeah. Commander Jim Waters.
Jim Waters.
He's the head of the whole East District.
Okay.
Now, if either he or someone does not get back to you in a timely manner, you can tell him you're on the radio with me and Rick Snyder, the VP of the FOP. If they don't get back to you in a timely manner, a couple business days, call the chief's office. Call the big chief.
Okay. Because I've called three times. And not saying this was anything race-related, because mine is a 2012 brand-new F-150. She was a white lady, and her car didn't get as significant damage as mine did.
No, but I think somebody should have gotten back to you, and I think part of what Rick Snyder's talking about, when you don't have enough officers, you don't have somebody that can get back to residents that quick. But the chief
begged the officer to verify my information.
Sure.
But again, I know the chief also wants to know those kind of things. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Appreciate that. 239-13. Tell me, go to Carol. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos, and hello to your guest.
Yes,
hey, Carol.
Rick Snyder. Okay, I'm glad he's on. I hope this won't be his last time coming on. You know,
I hope not either.
Okay, I hope you do. Well, now, listen, we just like you said, a policeman came out. We had a break-in and whatnot. This was during a Black Expo.
Yes,
you know,
ma'am.
All the policemen, you know, it took them a long time, but this little policeman, he was so kind. He explained, you know, he had to go to another place and everything. He was just busy at that time, so I know what you're going through and everything. So I'm glad you're explaining to us and letting us know what's happening and whatnot.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
I can't understand, young man, why are they all these bike trails? That's money. And everything, and then that cricket field out there, the whales and all of that nonsense out there. I'm always saying, you know, like my bus drivers, my firemen, and my policemen, please, you know, can't they use common sense? Really?
Yes,
it
ma'am.
Doesn't make any kind of sense to me. But thanks, and please come back on again. And like Amos always telling us, you know, when you're seeing policemen out there working hard, and now that I know that they're going through all of this too, a lot of people are going through things. I am too.
You're right.
But
you can go
out and you can say thank you for your service, just like the military people and all of that.
Yeah, that doesn't cost anything.
It just lifts you up in some kind of way. I do appreciate them.
Thank you so much.
So take care, and Thanks, Amos, for a wonderful program, okay?
I appreciate it. 239-1310, got an email at praiseindy.com. What is FOP's position on having dashboard cams, personal cams for police officers? I know some police agencies are doing that.
Yeah, a lot of officers actually would like to have the opportunity to have their work on those cameras.
Really?
Yeah, because, listen, it helps validate the word of the officer, if you will, in our police report with the courts and all those other things. It also makes a dramatic difference when you can see the alleged activity, especially on traffic stops and things such as that, in a court of law versus just trying to describe it. A picture speaks a thousand words, correct? Mm-hmm. And, hey, here's another deal, and it's a sad reminder. You know, we lost the last officer that we lost and was a good friend. Many people thought, hey, you know, he was shot on a traffic stop. Go and pull the video from the in-car camera. There wasn't one. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have that documented and that information available to us. But here's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
You got to have money to do those things.
You also are a service organization, and you all – somebody had a question, didn't want to go on the air. What do you do to provide for the families of the fallen?
Well, that's a large part of what we do, and most people aren't always aware of that. Or when they are, it's unfortunately when we've had a tragic event. We do many different projects throughout the year called Giving Back. It's a Giving Back campaign. And it's not just for the fallen. We do have that through our Concerns of Police Survivors. It's called COPS. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the employees at the local lodge here in Indianapolis is a past president of that national organization. Mm-hmm. So we're very involved and very in-depth with that. And we spend a considerable amount of time with that. We have a very active auxiliary, which are the spouses and family members of police officers who engage the community and help give back. We work with organizations such as our annual Shop with a Cop event, which will be coming up in December, by the way, where we put thousands of dollars back into the community helping disadvantaged youth have a Christmas that they probably wouldn't have. We also help with Prevent Child Abuse Indiana, the Villages, which is the largest nonprofit foster care placement organization in the state, and our Kids Can't Wait campaign. So there's a tremendous amount of other work. And when we tell people and we tell the story of the FOP, and invariably what we hear is, I never knew that. And you know what? We own that because we got to do a better job of telling our story. It's just unfortunately most of the time you see us talking or hear from us, it's on these controversial topics.
Let me go to Kareem at 239-1310, then we'll take a break. Hi, Kareem.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was still concerned about what you, Amos, was telling him about the minority officers.
Yeah.
From 1987 to up to now, we still don't have enough minority officers in the minority community. And I just think, for some reason, that has been designed on purpose because our children in our community, they need to see our people as officers taking care of the business of arresting, correcting. But most of our children, they see mostly Caucasian officers arresting our people. I don't know if you're feeling me on what I'm saying. But as a person of FOP, but I don't understand why that 25th and Martin Luther King, Hillside, places like that don't have more officers. And I think if they did have them, that the crime would go down. They would respect the officers more, and they wouldn't be in fear of their life when they see a Caucasian officer pulling up.
All right. Let me
The reason why I say that, Amos, is because of what happened to Candy Perry. Mm-hmm. You know, because the people, they loved her, and they gave her information, and then she went through what she went through.
That's a great point, Brother Kareem. This is part of what you're talking about, that if we invested in a recruit process that was much more aggressive, that went out not only for the best officers, but trying to find the best minorities and whites and whatever could be police officers, we could increase the number.
You're absolutely right. But you've got to dedicate funding and resources and make a commitment to that. Mm-hmm. The FOP has advocated for that, especially since 2008. So since 2008, we've been pushing for this to have a structured recruitment program and a plan and a process, and also have been supportive and advocating for minority hiring. And listen, there's no greater, no more or less represented group in law enforcement than females. So we've sponsored a Women in Leadership Conference, but we're also trying to solicit how do we get more candidates from the African-American community, but also Asian, Latino, from the Sikh community, which is very active in public service. So there's a lot of things that we've been doing. And, you know, it's one of those things that you have said before, too, which is tell me more about the FOP and these distortions. You know, this is about building bridges and helping people understand information. And a lot of times our organization gets a bad rep or questions about our feelings about diversity. Listen, over 31% of our executive board are minority.
31% of the executive board?
Of the executive board. 23% are African
American. That's a higher percentage of minorities on the police department.
Yes, sir. Again, we're just clarifying facts.
Okay.
On our labor management committee that works with the chief of police on those day-to-day labor issues, 57% of the committee has minority representation. 29% African American, 14% Latino, and 14% female. We take it very seriously because, listen, there's no one should be excluded, and we need all hands on deck.
Here's a trivia question. How many members of FOP that represent IM, how many IMPD officers live in Marion County? Maybe exact number. What percentage? Is it less than half, more than half?
Oh no. It's way more than half. There's probably right around 200 of the 1,500 that live outside of the Marion County limits.
Okay.
But they cannot live any further than one county out.
Because I think one of the perceptions is that most police officers don't live in the county.
No, it's actually quite the opposite. The vast majority do. Listen, we're taxpayers. Mm-hmm. We're dads. We're moms. We're grandparents. We love and believe in our community as well.
Should Indianapolis look at providing subsidies for police officers to move into the city? Say, hey, you know, I know you may like Morgan County, but such a deal, I can get you on a house in Marion County.
Let's find that $15, $25, $30 million that we need and have that be part of that. We absolutely need to look at any possible options out there.
239-1310, 239-1310, a lot more with the FOP after these. Oh, if you all are listening, those of you at the 25th floor responsible for monitoring this program, just tell the mayor, find the money! That's all you got to do. You know, we don't need no more. Let's have a moratorium on bike lanes, a moratorium on electric cars, a moratorium on any more cricket fields. Okay, what else can we put a moratorium on? Moratorium on giving any more money to the Pacers as long as they're winning. Okay, that's fair. Where else can we get a moratorium? Where can we get some more money? We'll figure out something to help our. I helped bring the helicopter back. Got bullets for the officers. 239-1310. Let me go to Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I have a question for you. My son, ever since he was 3 years old, wanted to be and wants to be in law enforcement. I have a two-part question. One, I'm very confused with the IMPD and the state police and the sheriff's department. And he's a senior in high school this year. And my question to you is, what do we do from the time he graduates for him to get into law enforcement? Because he has our unyielding support. We really support him on what he wants to do, and we think it's an honorable thing he's doing. But we just want to know what is the best thing for us to do to get him to, you know, fulfill his dream of being in.
All right, so he's getting ready to go into high school?
No, he's graduating from high school this year.
He's graduating?
Actually, next year, yeah. Yeah, so he's a senior this year.
All right, so theoretically, Rick Snyder, a high school graduate, that's the minimum educational requirement?
It is. However, what we always remind people of is you're often going to be competing with folks who also have some type of higher education beyond high school. So you get a lot of college graduates that you're competing with, as well as folks who have experiences.
Do you need to major in criminology, criminal justice, liberal arts, woodworking?
Yeah, this is what I always say. Go and get your education, because you never know. You get into this field, you could get hurt tomorrow and not be able to do this job anymore. So you need to have some other vocation that you can fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
I always encourage people, don't go to college and study criminal justice. We will teach you that. Go and learn another transferable skills. We need people with accounting degrees. We need people with marketing degrees. Marketing folks make great recruiters eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things such as that. But what I would say to Eric and his son is we have mentoring programs that are available. They're less and less now because we don't have the resources available to provide it. But contact the FOP and we can make that contact as well. For him to start mentoring now, he can start doing some ride-alongs now. And then I would also encourage him to start thinking about schools to go to. Now, one of the other things that we encourage too that most people aren't aware of Indiana University. You can go there, and while you're a student and getting your degree, you can join the police department on campus. They'll put you through the police academy. So you leave there with a degree, certified police officer, police experience, and you come back and apply. We want those people.
And then
what about the military service? Would that be a bonus? We also consider doing that.
Yeah, that always helps. And again, great transferable skills, and they're going to prepare people for a lot of the same things that we deal with in a paramilitary organization. Just don't feel like you're locked in. You know, we also, one great police officer that we have on our department who has also been a recruiter and active in the community is a music major, an operatic singer, believe that or not. And he's fantastic, and he makes a great police officer. So it takes all kinds of various backgrounds, experiences, and exposures to make us successful.
Eric, that's a great question. And the FOP's number, if he wants to call, is?
637-1195. 637-1195. You can also always go to our website at FOP86.org.
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Rick Snyder, a dumb question. The city's attitude towards de-emphasizing PAL Club, de-emphasizing the OK program, that doesn't help in potential recruiting. That doesn't help, you know, people like Eric's son.
It's not only recruiting, but it's another key component of these two words, crime prevention. So unless you look at that as an investment and a prevention activity, any bean counter is going to look at the budget and say, we don't need to do that anymore. Well, that's short-sighted, because the earlier you can engage and interact with a youth, a person in their life, in a positive experience with law enforcement, the better not police officers are going to be, but a more productive and better citizen they're going to be.
Let me go to John right quick at 239-1310. Hi, John.
Well, howdy. How you doing today, gentlemen?
We're fine.
Hi, John.
Yeah, a couple of three things. First, I have friends on the force, former law enforcement officer myself. I've actually ran into them when they were heading to work and taking toilet paper in their car to take it to where they worked because they didn't have any. So I know that goes on. Two, the Sheriff's Department, I've seen them run several classes through. You see it on Channel 16. My understanding is they've had, you know, a fairly good turnover. They're not ILEA certified, so when they run through, you know, they have their own academy over here. And they're not paid as well as IMPD are because of the fact that they're what, special deputies. As far as I'm I know these days, there's no such thing as a merit officer, unless it might be somebody that's a former merit officer from another agency or even the sheriff's department that's retired and came back or something. But I don't think they have actually a merit system anymore.
No.
I keep wondering about, you know, the cost of all these classes the sheriff's department's running through because they have a turnover. Yet these folks, if they were ILEA, you know, certified, they'd be grabbed up by other departments that pay more in most cases, or in some cases, as you say, a lateral taking right across. So, you know, I think, and we've got, 28 law enforcement departments here in the Marion County, not only IPD and or IMPD, the sheriff's department. You've got like Rocky Ripple, Warren Park, and a, you know, Crow's Nest, and a whole bunch of others. I think we need to take a look at the entire overall system and take and somehow get this into one system. We've got just too many, you know, diversified small little entities all over the place. It should be in one big budget.
I don't, you know, but I think the experience with the merger, y'all at FOP, y'all ain't gonna be, you ain't feeling that.
Well, there's a lot to consider whenever you go and look at something like that. And I would just make this point. I'm not disagreeing, but I would make this point. Most people feel most comfortable with, especially law enforcement and public safety, that is closest to them. So they want to know the police officer in their neighborhood. They want to know the department that serves them, and they want that as close as possible. And you see that in a lot of other communities. But that's why Beech Grove still has Beech Grove Police Department. They want to have their own police department, and they've made that investment, and rightfully so. I don't belabor that at all. But what I would say is, you got to take very great concern and steps when you move forward with any kind of consolidation or merging plans, because there are a lot of second and third order effects, ripple effects, if you will, that people don't anticipate. And it's a great thought. It's just a little bit more challenging than what it seems on its surface.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Before I take a break, an argument can be made that if we had not merged, then the sheriff would have had to add more merit officers to compensate for the huge population growth in the sheriff's patrol area. And by merging, we really haven't factored all of that in. So we've got the old IPD district that has a disproportionate amount of crime. But then increasingly there are township neighborhoods where the crime is increasing. And so it is fair to say that we need to really take a hard look at, unless somebody thinks the size of this county in terms of people is going to shrink in the next 10 to 15 years, then we've got to ramp up a little bit to compensate for that.
We've got to ramp up a lot. I mean, we're 700 officers down. So here's the deal. We were short Marion County deputies before we merged.
Right.
We were short IPD officers before we merged. Mm-hmm. I'm not real good at math, but when you put two shorts together, you're still
short.
And then we've allowed ourselves to drop hundreds more less than that. So when we merged, we had over 1,600 officers. We went up to nearly 1,740 officers. We're now down to 1,540. So we're 200 down from when we merged in the year after that. That's when we were short. So that's why people quickly see this is a crisis, because we're 700, hundreds officers are short. And if we want to disagree over the number, can we just agree it's hundreds and let's form a plan?
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Rick Snyder from the FOP. Tomorrow we talk about Syria. Monday, guess who's here? The folks from the Circle City Classic, 30th edition of the Circle City Classic on a different week, the second Saturday in October. Which probably means all those police officers that thought the Classic was going to be the first weekend in October and they planned their vacations for the second weekend in October, they got a problem. And then
we're ready.
And then, yeah, they'll complain to the FOP. How do we do? Anyway, we'll be back with our remaining moments after these. All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. So let me go to Brenda right quick. Hi, Brenda. Got about a minute.
Hi, Amos. How you doing?
Fine.
Hello, Mr. Snyder. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Brenda.
Sir, can you tell me what is the reporting requirements of school police when they engage in arresting a child? And the reason why I asked that question, Mr. Snyder, is you made reference to civil rights.
Yes, ma'am.
What's happening? We got children with disabilities here whose educational rights are being denied, and then the school system will arbitrarily file a criminal report against these children to, in other words, deny these children or circumvent the federal rights of these children. How can you become an advocate for these children, because the schools are not doing what they're required to do by federal law, and many of these children are getting arrested?
Well, here again, I would say please feel free to contact us at the FOP. Again, we work very closely with youth organizations, and we also work with legislative and advocacy issues at the State House on just exactly these same kind of topics. So I know we're pressed for time, but I can help you with that. Just reach out to us, but definitely look on the website and give us a call.
All right. I appreciate that. Bottom line, we need to get the resources, the dollars necessary for our police officers, for our IMPD to do their job and dedicate it.
Absolutely.
And if people want more information about the FOP, you guys got a website?
FOP86.org.
All right. FOP86, Rick Snyder, he won't be a stranger. Thanks very much for being with us. And as we go
Thank
off
you.
The air, we have breaking news, Chris. The interim superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools, Peggy Hinckley, is stepping down from her position a week earlier than expected, citing scheduling conflicts. That's breaking news. We won't talk about that tomorrow with my Friday friend, but we'll talk more about this, because I know a little bit something about it, on our program Monday. Dun, 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 dun. But anyway, tomorrow, a more serious note, what do we do about the situation in Syria? More importantly, how does our community feel about that? Tomorrow on the program, our Friday friend will be here. We're going to lay low to allow you to have your – we want to hear the viewpoints of our community on Syria. Everybody's all over the place on this, and it's very, very important. It is life and death. So we want to hear from you tomorrow. Rick Snyder, thanks very much for being with us. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.